Okay, so we're in the Gospel of John, and we're just going light speed through it. So, so we're going to first, as you know, we're going to start with a clip from the movie The Gospel of John, which I think is probably the most high production besides The Passion of the Christ, the best Jesus movie made. It's just word for word The Gospel of John. So, I mean, The Gospel of John isn't really a movie script, but I think it's a really well done movie, and I just think it helps bring up more understanding to the text than I ever could sometimes. So we'll just watch the clip of today's reading. I started it a little early for more context, but yeah. So let's get that on. Oh, you lost it, huh? It's right in the middle of the desktop. It says Gospel, or it says John 1:6-9. Yep.
Beginning, the Word was with God. Through him, God made all things. Not one thing in all creation was made without him. The Word was the source of life, and this life brought light to people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has never put it out. God sent his messenger, a man named John, who came to tell people about the light, so that all should hear the message and believe. He himself was not the light. He came to tell about the light. This was the real light, the light that comes into the world and shines on all people.
You can read on if you want to know what happens. Right. So, let us... So, I've titled this sermon Witness, because we're going to talk about witness, I guess. Yes. Okay. So, let's begin. Who was John the Baptist? Anyone know anything about John the Baptist? I like to call him John the Presbyterian, but that's just me. Rob? He ate locusts. Yes, I don't have that on here. You get bonus points. Yes, he ate locusts. You know what locusts are? They're like grasshoppers. Yeah, it's good. Have you ever had grasshoppers? I was at a Christian camp, and we found grasshoppers, and then we put them in chocolate, and then we put them over a fire, and then we ate them. And it was, yes, gross. but cool. All the young boys, 9 years old, we're like, yeah! But yeah, locusts, yes. Anything else? Yes. Yes, yeah, he got beheaded because of this, due to some unfortunate circumstances. Yes, yeah. Other things? Does anyone else know anything else about John the Presbyterian? Yeah. Oh, there you go. Wow, a prophet in our midst. Right? He was a forerunner of Jesus. He was a cousin of Jesus. He was a forerunner. He's often he's identified with the prophet Elijah, sort of as hearkening the days of the Lord. Some of Jesus' disciples used to be John's disciples, and actually, a lot of people think that Jesus himself might have been a disciple of John for a while. He was killed by beheading due to a interesting circumstance involving a dancer, exotic dancer. And in the Gospel of John, he is a witness to the light. Also, the Gospel of John isn't written by this John. So sometimes, you know, just in case, sometimes people think that, no, John the Baptist had nothing to do with this gospel. That's this disciple John. So, we are witnesses, just like John the Baptist. So John the Baptist in the Gospel of John is a witness to the light. He's there to show the light. He's there to bring, to basically demonstrate the light to the world. He's there to actually, that's his whole purpose. In the Gospel of John, his whole purpose is to be a forerunner to the light, a proclaimer of the light, a preparer for the light, the light, the light, the light. John is a witness to the light. But we're also witnesses to the light. And so we're going to discuss a bit about that. So being a witness for God is something that every Christian, you know, gets a chance to do, right? Some preach the word of God, some do mission projects, and many others simply live a life that show people God's goodness. And whatever our witness looks like, we are called to present a witness to the world around us. We're meant to give a testimony. We're meant to show light. Wherever we are, we should be light to the world. And so that's a question we can all ask ourselves. Do I bring light to the world, or do I bring darkness? I mean, a favorite question I always like to ask myself is if a meteor came and destroyed this church. So let's just say we're all here, and a meteor from out there came all the way down and just wiped this church right out. Would anyone care that we were gone? Besides us, maybe. Would anyone care? Well, maybe God's the one sending the meteor. You know, would anyone care? Like, would the people next door care that this church was gone? Or would actually a lot of people be happy that this church is gone? Because now they get to build sky rises and there's no more annoying church playing drums at 11 o'clock. I don't know, right? But that's a question we should ask. So we're meant to be witnesses. Are we a light? And so if this church were to just vanish, would anyone miss it? That's something we can ask ourselves. A witness stands up and says that Jesus is alive, that we may not know everything, but we do know a holy God who loves us. And also a witness constantly strives to learn from Jesus. We need to spend time and energy communicating and learning from Jesus' feet. And finally, a witness needs to be empowered from above. Only by the Holy Spirit is the goal of witnessing achieved, and only when we are empowered by the Holy Spirit does our witness and testimony carry to other people's lives. This is of the utmost importance. And what a constant theme through the Gospel of John is the light, witnessing to the light, understanding the light. Jesus is the light. It's all about the light. It's a very light-focused gospel. Now, but sometimes there's objections given to Christians sharing their faith, and so I'm going to talk about a couple of those. The first one is you shouldn't be forcing your views on other people. Have you ever heard this particular objection, especially when it comes to religion? You know, you shouldn't force your views on other people. Yeah, anyone? I get this. When I was at, also during Jesus Week, I was at a, there was this cafe where they asked, the organizers wanted pastors there so that in case, and the idea was that students would be giving free coffee to people and getting into spiritual conversations, and if anything went like too hard for them to answer a question, you'd hand them to the pastor. And the most common question I got while I was there was this one from the people. From the Christians sharing, they said, we get asked this all the time. And so I had to answer this question like three times this week. So it kind of works with the Bible passage. You shouldn't be forcing your views on other people. Well, one thing is, if we shouldn't be forcing one's views, then why are you forcing your views on me? Right? The idea that you shouldn't force your views on your religious views on another person is a religious view. And if that's a religious view, you're forcing it on me, and thus it's kind of self-defeating. Do you see how that works? Do you see what? Some people are this, some people are like this, right? If someone says you shouldn't force your religious views on someone, that is a religious view, which they're forcing on you, right? So it's kind of a self-contradictory thing. Does that make sense? But that not having a view is a view, right? If I don't have a religious view, That's a view on religion, that you shouldn't force religious views on people, right? Now, of course, if you're using a sword and putting it to someone's neck and saying, be a Christian or else, then yeah, we shouldn't be doing that, Yes, okay. But just telling people what you believe and the reasons why, that's just normal, common sense, I think. You know, don't be a jerk about it. But you know, I think it's perfectly fine that for us to share our views. I wonder, do you believe, for example, you could ask this person, do you believe that murder is wrong? Would you be willing to force that belief on others? How about the belief that everyone should have access to clean drinking water? Would you be willing to force that belief on other people? I'm pretty sure that most people would be more than happy to force those beliefs on others. And why is that? Because they think those beliefs are true. You know, most people are more than willing to say, you know, everyone should have access to free drinking water. Why? Because we all agree that that's a good thing. We all agree that that's true. So naturally, if I think Christianity is true, isn't the moral thing to do is to live as if it's true? And if I'm living as if it's true, that means I need to actually share my faith in gentleness, respect, in love, and without a sword to people's necks. And then sometimes another objection you get is you should just live a good Christian life. And if you just live a good Christian life, people will see the goodness in your life, and then they'll be enamored with the gospel. This is a common one. Often they'll use an apocryphal quote of St. Francis of Assisi, you know, always preach the gospel, and when necessary, use words. But what they're really meaning is never use words, just live a good life. The downside to this particular one is I personally am not confident that my life is at such a morally excellent level that people would convert to Jesus just based on seeing me in action, right? I just don't have confidence in my own Christian walk, that I am so good, that I am the paragon of moral perfection, that people would just flock to Jesus because they see my glorious life. Actually, I would imagine my life maybe probably pushes some people away, unfortunately. And finally, anyone can do good deeds, but only Christians can share the gospel. I mean, anyone can feed an orphan, anyone can give bread, anyone can help someone across the street, anyone can do that, but only a Christian can share the gospel. And so that is just to address those two objections about witnessing. Also, if you have questions, feel free to text me. And my number's in the bulletin. And or you could just put up your hand. Now, how to be a witness. You know, I completely agree that it's our job to preach the gospel to every living creature and to help all people see their desperate need for a savior. But as in all things, our model for how we should go about this, I think, needs to be based on the life of Jesus. So, for example, when Jesus and Paul talked to Jews, he on occasion brought up the law, because as Jews, they believed in and understood the law. But when talking to non-Jews, Jesus and Paul never brought up the law. Remember in Acts 17, it's a very famous passage, Paul is talking to the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers in Athens, Greece. He doesn't even bring up the Bible. He quotes a poem about Zeus. He uses a poem about Zeus to defend his point, to argue for the resurrection of Jesus. It's really, really bizarre in some ways. But when talking to non-Jews, Jesus and Paul never brought up the law. His approach was not at all to convince them they deserved to go to hell because they broke a commandment and then to offer himself as their rescue ticket. That's not how they approached it. What Jesus consistently did was to see a need and then meet it. He healed people, he delivered people, he befriended people, etc. And ultimately, he gave his life for them. And he never seemed in a rush to get people to sign on the dotted line. Ever notice that? He never said, okay, now that you're healed, believe in me or go to hell. I mean, that's not quite how he did it. He saw needs and he met them. He just demonstrated God's love to them. This is evangelism kind of in Jesus style. We sacrificially serve people. And when opportunities arise, we invite people into a relationship with Christ. That is absolutely essential as well. And if we first spent time serving them, our words will have some meaning because we've already demonstrated our concern and our care in action. So, I mean, I think this is a big thing that we need to, which goes back to my point about, would this anyone miss this church if a meteor came and destroyed it? I mean, we would miss it, But the church isn't just for us. The church is for our community around us. The church is for the city of Auckland. That's why we're here. We're here to be a light shining in the darkness. And so the question we have to ask ourselves is, are we sacrificially serving the community? And, you know, and if you feel like, you know what, I really want to sacrificially serve the community, I just don't know how, well, that's where our wonderful elders and Gene, who, right, Gene, you're the one in charge of evangelism? Gene has all the answers to how to sacrificially serve. And if you have ideas, you know what, this is always a pet peeve of pastors. When people go, you know what, ACPC, yeah, that's a pretty good church, but you know what I really wish it had? I wish it had X. X being, you know, better Bible studies or more evangelism this or something that or blah, blah, blah. That's great. If you think the church needs something like that, please start it, right? You know, if you're sitting here and you think this church could really use X, let someone like me or Gene or Marty or someone know, and maybe we can start X, right? Because we want to be a church that sacrificially serves those around us, right? That's why we're here. That's the whole point. There's no point in being here. There's no point in the automatic payments and the offering and all that sort of stuff if it just all terminates on us. We're here to be a light to the community around us and a light to ourselves as well. But the community is important as well. So and as we serve people like Jesus did, God uses our love and then perhaps our words to turn people and to continue to turn us. And so I'm not downplaying words. We need to have our words. There has to be words there. We can't just be doing good deeds and this, that, and the other thing. But maybe you want some tips on the words part of witnessing. How can I actually use my words to communicate the gospel to people? Well, one thing to do is to let people around you know you are a Christian in a naturally unforced way. That's, you know, you don't have to like, you know, when I first became a Christian, I bought this hat. You know WWJD? Do you know that phrase? What would Jesus do? Well, this hat was one of those big cat in the hat hats. It was really big. And it was like colorful and had like a, like the cat in the hat, right? And it had WWJD all over it, right? And I would wear that. And I was all like, people were like, the words I heard spoke to me wearing that hat. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be loud about it. You don't have to shout out. But, you know, just casually, if it comes up in conversation, you know, what did you do this week? Oh, I went to church. Oh, why do you go to church? Oh, you know, because I'm a church-going person, right? I remember when I was in the military, I was never in the face of everyone. But, you know, eventually people would just find out that I was a Christian because I just, if it came up in conversation, I just casually let it be known in a natural, unforced way. So you don't have to, you know, as soon as you meet someone, go, hi, my name is Bob and I'm a Christian. No, you don't have to do that. But, you know, just in a natural way. If your name's not Bob, well, then there's no hope for you, unfortunately. Yeah. You can replace it with Marty. I've heard that works occasionally. Yes. Also, ask friends about their faith and just listen. I mean, I think something we forget that, you know, it's sometimes people feel like if all you're doing is trying to share your faith and not listening to them, they just feel you're trying to sell them. You're trying to convince, you know, they're wrong, you're right, and you're going to show them why. And you know what? That's not really the best approach, I don't think. I think actually we can learn a lot from a lot of other people, even people we disagree with. I think there's a lot to learn there, a lot of wisdom to learn from other people. Just because I disagree with someone doesn't mean don't have anything to contribute to a conversation. So, you know, I find that sometimes my most fruitful discussions and journeys is just to ask people, well, what do you believe about things, you know? Again, as if it's natural in the conversation, you know, you don't want to be like, oh, this is great tea, you know? What do you believe about absolute truth, right? you know, just naturally, you know, if it comes up, you know, I can't just think of a thing right off the top of my head per se, but, you know, sometimes questions like, you know, what do you think happens when we die? That is a good question. You know, what do you think? You know, do you think anything? Have you ever thought, what do you think there's? Do you think there's life on other planets? You know, now you might not immediately think that that's a spiritual question, but that can lead to spiritual questions. You know, what would be the significance if there was life on other planets? What would that mean for the human race? Does that mean the human race isn't special? Would God create other races to be in relationship with them? I don't know. That's an interesting question. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, ask them what they think. And don't just be all about what you think. Ask them what they think. And really take it seriously. You know, my growth in my understanding and of the Christian faith and all that comes from questions and from things that were told to me by other people. When I first became a Christian, I became into contact with lots of Mormons. And I'd ask them, well, what do you believe, Mr. Mormon? And they'd be like, I believe this. And I'd be like, wow, I do not agree with that. And I have, but you make it sound so good. How, I don't know. And so then I had to wrestle with that and think about it. And it was very fruitful for me. It's hard. It's messy. It makes you uncomfortable. But I think it creates more fruitful dialogue. Listen to your friends' problems. Maybe offer to pray for them. You know, be willing to listen to people. Be willing to enter into their lives. Not you know, listen to their problems so then you can then cut them down about, oh, well, you shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have done. No, just listen, understand, appreciate who they are. Maybe offer to pray for them if they're willing to have that. You know, share your problems with others. Testify to how your faith helps you. You know, sometimes, a lot of people find great comfort in the Christian faith. It gives them hope. It gives them joy. You know, talk about that. Be willing to share that about your own personal journey and how the Christian faith has helped you in various things. Sometimes that helps. You could give them a book to read. Maybe they're interested in things, and you can hand them a book. I know some. This is a very popular approach. Maybe there's a book that impacted you. I remember when I first came here, Marty gave me, what did you give me? A Philip Yancey book. What was what? Yeah, yeah. What's so amazing about grace? He was like, what, you're a pastor? You've never read Philip Yancey? That was probably pretty bad of me. It was an excellent book. But I mean, there's books that you can hand to people that can do a lot of the heavy lifting for you. Share your own personal story. Share your own story about your own, you know, as Rob was doing this morning. You know, beginning to share his, just who you are. You know, just be a person. Be real. It's not like, don't make witnessing, don't make the Christian faith like a used car lot, you know. You know, for five easy payments of $5.99, you can have Jesus as your savior. You know, as seen on TV. Right? No, be real. You know, it's, you know, it, be a light. You know, we're here to be a light, to bring joy, to shed light to the world, not to just sell a product. Be willing to answer objections and questions. People have objections and questions. It happens. People say, well, you know what, I don't agree about this, or I don't understand that, or well, what do you mean by that, and this type of thing. And when you get questions and objections, don't react defensively. I mean, I think sometimes this is a problem that people, like, someone says, you know, I think Jesus is just a bunch of poppycock, you know? And then you get all like, oh my, and then the conversation just explodes into ugliness, and then you lose your friendship, and then they never want to talk about the Christian faith with you again because you acted so defensively. And I can understand that when cherished beliefs are critiqued, that can make us uncomfortable. That can make us want to act defensively. But you know what? I've never really seen good come out of that. If you act really negatively to questions, I think appreciating the person's question is really important. Acknowledge the importance and difficulty of the question. You know, when people ask me questions that are tough, I acknowledge, you know what? That is a good question. That's something I wrestle with. For example, when someone asks me, you know, what are some of the hardest questions that you wrestle with? For me, one of them is the problem of animal pain. The problem of animal pain and suffering. I mean, I don't know if this bugs anyone, but, you know, you go on YouTube and you just search, you know, lions eating zebras and you know, 10,000 or 1,000 wasps kill 50,000 bees or, you know, these things. And you just see, and you see the animals ripping each other apart and alive and it's, you know, and then I eat my, that hamburger, you know, the McDonald's, but it's so good. But what was needed to be done to that? You know, I'm not, you know, I'm not one of those people who think animals are people too, but they do suffer. And that's something I wrestle with. And I have my answers. I can give you my theological answers, my philosophical answers, but it's something that I still wrestle with. Or maybe even the hypocrisy in the church or my own life. You know, that's something I wrestle with. So acknowledge the ugly things. Acknowledge the problem. Be willing to do that. And constantly people appreciate that when you acknowledge that their question is legitimate. And explore the context of the question. Why are they even asking the question? You know, I remember when I was on Queen Street doing some stuff, and this guy who was really angry, he came up and he was talking to me, and he was a redhead, and that's relevant to the story. That's why I mention it. And as I was, he was really angry, but as I was talking to him, I learned more about his background. When he was a kid, he was bullied a lot, in particular because of his red hair, which I don't get that, but I guess that's a thing here. And the kids would always tell him he was going to hell because he wasn't a Christian or anything. So he was a red-headed guy going to a red hell, right? And that really obviously played a big effect on him. So his questions were coming from a different context. And let's say someone who maybe was in a church and hurt by someone in a church, or maybe someone who's never been to church before, ever. You know, maybe they're so that person's questions are going to be coming from a very different place than someone who was bullied as a kid. And so that's something you want to find out. Get greater context to the question, right? That can help you appreciate and understand where they're coming from more. You know, you can invite them to a church event like the potluck or just some other general church event. You can offer to read the Bible with them. Sometimes people are interested in that. I mean, I always love it when we get new people who aren't really Christians who are like, I'm reading the Bible, Mark, and it's, wow, this is great. And I'm like, wow, if only the people at the church would be like you, right? You know, Mark, I'm reading Leviticus, and wow, man, it's so interesting. I'm like, really? Yeah, wow. And, you know, offer to read the Bible with them so you can discuss it with them. You know, sometimes people are interested in that. Surprisingly, sometimes people are interested. You know, I sometimes find it funny because people will come to, they'll invite their friends to church, but then they'll try to like downplay all the churchy parts of church. And I'm like, and I just get confused because if someone's coming to church, they're expecting to come to a church, right? Like if I go to a mosque, I'm expecting a mosque, right? I'm expecting the Muslims to do Muslim things, right? If they make it all Christian-y, and they put a cross in there for me, and they make it all nice and church. Well, then what was the point of me going to the mosque? I went to the mosque so I could understand Islam. Right? And in the same way, you know, people come to church. They want to know what church is. They want to know. Like, right? It's sometimes people are really actually interested. And I think sometimes we forget that. You know, invite them to a home group. A nice, you know, a good place to ask questions, express concerns, this type of thing. And finally, you know, you might even invite them to a church service. So that's a possibility, right? And so these are some ways on tips on the words part. So conclusion. When we rely on God, we naturally become a witness. And living a life of love and other-oriented sacrifice will naturally make people see your life as a witness. So remember, we have to sacrifice ourselves. We have to be a light first, I think, before we earn the right for the words. But there must be words. There must be a verbal witness, a language that communicates. When someone asks you why you do what you do, you should have an answer. And, and so I just, right here in our passage with John as the witness, he was a witness to Jesus, and I think we should be a witness too. Is there any questions about any of that? You all look pretty tired. There's definitely a noticeable difference on this daylight savings time Sunday than other days. You're like even too tired to text. Yes. Yeah. Right. Traditionally, it was the disciple John. is viewed as having written the Gospel of John. Some other possibilities are maybe the community of John wrote it as more of a community book with the influence of John. Some people think it is the elder John who wrote the book of Revelation. So that's a possibility as well. Though some people think the disciple John wrote the book of Revelation. So those are some of the possibilities. Yeah, or it could just be we don't know. But I think there's good reasons to think it was probably the disciple of John, or at the very least the community of John. Yeah. Good question. Was there a hand? Oh, you were just doing your hair. Okay, that's good. You're being a light, showing your joy. Right. Well, someone else who has also been a great light in our city is our Sunday school. So their Sunday school has won second place in, unfortunately, I forget what, but you're soon going to find out. So if I could call the Sunday school up, and Ann Overton, who is here, to present the second place prize. The Sunday school, you can come up. We want to see your shining, light, beaming faces. Yes, and
good morning, and I'm delighted to be here to be able to award this prize to your very creative Sunday school. And they are runner-up in the Press Care Art and Writing and Photography competition. That is a combination of it's a kids-friendly and Presbyterian support New Zealand national art and writing competition. So we've got hundreds of entries, and the Auckland Chinese Presbyterian Church did a group entry, and I really loved that because the theme of this year's competition was Love Reaches Out, We Can Make a Difference. And they did that by coming together and making a difference. So I'd like to actually hear a little bit more about their work and what their thoughts were and how they came about doing what they did. So do you want to share? And then I'll present the award. This is the piece of art. So do you want to share something?
Hi, my name is Shirley. I enjoy coming to Sunday school with Auntie Jean. Going to Paper Bag Club, we help to pack food stuff for the food bank. I learned that many people need help with buying their groceries. These additional bags of food not only provide food for their stomachs, but also shows that we also we do care and we can make a difference. Thank you, God, for you provide.
Thank you.
That's Shirley. I'll just explain a little bit about our work here. This bit here, this is done by the little ones and with a little framing from the older children. But these older paper cups are supposed to be vegetable gardens and flower gardens. That's supposed to be kia ora to our community garden. And that's going to give us a head start with the community garden at the back. So we need more volunteers for community garden. And that's a tree. So how the tree, the branches spread out and how we spread out as well. And the branches support people and support birds and animals. And that lighthouse. And this is where some little ones actually went around to put all these slips of paper with hearts and hands, and they drew the hands themselves. But unfortunately, the little girl who drew the hand is not here. And we did all these rays of light. It's like, you know, reaching out and doing kind words, kind deeds, and fishing. And that's because we are a sailing country, aren't we? So, and these are supposed to be the rocks. Yeah, the rocks here. So even though we've got hard times, we have to stand on rocks, we're still going on, steady on. And that's a good work from all the children, from the very little ones to the teenage ones.
And Shirley just shared the practical ways that we do that.
And Rena is one of the older ones. She's going to share.
Hi, my name's Irina. I've been a Christian for like most of my life, and yet I still find there are many things that we need to learn. Some of the good experiences I've learned through being Christian is that when a friend is fretting about, let's say, tomorrow's exam or yesterday's argument, I can tell them that they can pray. And I also tell them, don't worry, God has everything prepared out for you. And often, they find this really helpful, and they come back to me and tell that just by praying and talking to God, that this has made a huge difference to them. I really thank God for giving me the confidence to do what I do and letting my friends and family know that what He can do and who He is. By trusting God, we can make a difference. If we put all our faith into Him, we could change so many things. Just you see.
That was fantastic. And the judges for this competition were Dr. Bruce Wills, who's the Children's Commissioner, and also Sue Mackwell, and she is the National Director for the Children Action Plan. So these people are really passionate about children. And they both said to me, you know, if only we'd had the original, because they saw in the photograph that this was great, but you know what? Seeing this original, I believe they would have won. So next year, when you enter in, here's your tip. Get someone to drop it off, okay? Well, I'll even come and pick it up, because this is fantastic. And particularly the stories that you've shared this morning about all the effort that you put in and the thought and the different ways that you've made a difference. It was fantastic. So who's going to receive the award and the gift voucher? Okay. Congratulations. You've done a wonderful job with your children. And here's your certificate, and there's a gift voucher on the back, so you could go and buy some more art supplies or some food. So congratulations.
So thank you very much, Sunday School. That's great that you are a light here in Auckland. And I would just encourage us all, adults, with great, much more responsibility, that we also can be a great light here in the city of Auckland. So let's give one more applause for our Sunday School. Woo! So if I could call the worship team up for our final song.